being with someone as they approach death is one of the most holy parts of my work. It's funny when people thank me because I feel so honored to be in that moment with them that it doesn't feel right to be thanked. It's really wonderful to be allowed into sacred moments like that. And there are also happy moments, weddings, bris. But for me, towards the end of a person's life is just an incredibly holy time. So if you have the opportunity to visit someone in that state, please do. What's hard for me, and I think for many of us, is when you allow yourself to open your heart to a community. In a normal course of a human being's life, they might attend a funeral of a loved one, you know, every 5 to 10 years, I guess. But if you're part of a community, you can start attending funerals more than once a year of people you really cared about. And you remember where they sat, Joel. Leon used to be here. I just, you know, Mindy. Just closer, wasn't it? Yeah. And so I hinted at this at Neela. It's just been on my mind. And I'm sorry to indulge. But I was visiting someone in this condition yesterday, and it is both very holy and very overwhelming. And I recommend that you... I wish there were a way for me to, without breaking confidentiality, communicate to people. I hint. I say, you should really visit so-and-so soon. Which is my polite way of saying you don't have much time left to visit so-and-so. Sermon is kind of lighthearted. It's just, I'm sorry, just not in a great space for it. But I'll try. Okay. Pardon? Oh. Yeah, I'd like to. Let me just share a little bit because there's just some sweet stuff. And this parsha is really beautiful. You know, I'm a big fan of poetry generally. So my introduction would be to talk about Steve Martin's classic routine, Let's Get Small. Does anyone know this one? He talks about, you know, he talks about like a drug experience. You know, sometimes I like to get small. One time I got so small, I couldn't get in my car. But I guess the connection was when I was visiting a person recently and praying with them at the bedside, the Hebrew phrase that came up to me, and it was, you know, it's the season, so it's on our minds, is Avinu Malkeinu Chonenu Vanenu Ke'en Banu Ma'asim Atzei Imanu Tzedakah V'Chesed Voshenu. And that phrase in the middle, Ein Banu Ma'asim, does everyone know what that means? Does anyone know what it means? We have no works. We have nothing, if you think about it in the Calvinist way, works. We have no good works. We have done nothing with our lives, which, God forbid, is an exaggeration, but it is also true, you know, that our lives are, in the end, not measured by our resume, and that we are very small, and trivial is the wrong word, but ephemeral. And we rely on God's chesed v'tzedakah, God's righteousness and God's grace, to make make merit of our lives. There's this beautiful contrast that I want to share with you. When you talk about music, you talk about dynamics in an orchestra, so the quiet parts and the loud parts. And there's a beautiful contrast in dynamics of a different kind in the parsha of the small versus the grandiose. So Moshe Leib of Sasov, who's writing in the 19th century, would use a phrase from our parsha, and he would stand before God saying, Yehi chastecha Hashem kasher yichanu lach. Just as we wait upon you, you should measure us. So we wait upon you, though you can't be seen, and you look upon us, though we don't have merit. We are very small. I can't recall who it was, but there's a definition of humility that I like, which is, it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And this feeling of, I went up once for vacation. My parents live by the Atlantic near Boston, and someone said quite beautifully, going to the ocean makes you feel small. Oh God, that's such a great experience. Because you just feel like all your troubles, to quote Casablanca, don't amount to a hill of beans. You know, and I think we're uncomfortable with the idea of releasing from our grandiosity and admitting that we are not the center of the universe, because it's terrifying. I mean, as we went from biblical to Newtonian to quantum physics, we understood ourselves to be less and less the center of the universe. Biblical, I should say, to Galilean, to Newtonian, to quantum. You know, in the biblical era, we were the center of the universe, and the universe was only 6,000 years old, and there are just a few humans on it, and that's all that matters. But in the reality, this might not even be the only universe. So we are very small, but that can be terrifying, but also liberating. We're told in the parsha, we are an am naval velochacham. We're a nation of idiots, ignoramuses. And the Divrei Shaul, also writing in the 19th century, expands upon this, and he says, you're riffraff, sinners, you don't know anything. And that can be a huge liberation, to not need to know, to not need to be powerful, to not need to have libido dominandi, is the Latin church word, the will to power over other people, and admitting that we have flaws. I hate playing board games, because I'm academically successful, but the place where my stupidity shows is that I can never win strategic board games. I'm just not good at that. I can't play chess. And so I hate playing it, because it's an embarrassment to me that I'm not good at that. I wasn't very good at Talmud. But being able to admit where we are limited is really powerful. You can always work on it, but to admit how small you are, and I guess that's the connection to visiting the dying, is talking with them and admitting to yourself, no one knows what happens next. And after I paid this visit yesterday, I was telling my wife about it last night, and she says, oh, I'm terrified to visit. I don't know what to say. And I mean, she's had death in her family, so I think she's overplaying that. Through this, you can say nothing. No one knows what to say. No one knows what to say in face of the enormity of the universe. It's dumbfounding, and it ought to be. In my first chaplaincy training, there was an Orthodox Jewish person. It was a multi-faith, but he happened to be Orthodox Jewish. And he would always say, wow. And I thought, oh, God, stop saying that. And then I realized that's the only word you can always say. Have I done this little experiment with you? My dog died. Wow. My daughter got into college. Wow. I think I have prostate cancer. Wow. It works. But also silence in the face of the enormity of things works. And the psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. You can just be small. You don't have to be awesome. And it took me a long time to realize, this is something my supervisor at a drug and alcohol rehab pointed out, and I didn't get it. As a rabbi, you're not the effective agent. The tradition is, and God is. What brings people wisdom is not your knowledge. It's what the knowledge is. It's the Mesorah, our tradition. It's the richness of something beyond you that you at best are a capacitor or a channel for. The Kedushat Levi, a mystical teacher, another Hasidic teacher, talks about the mystical idea that was expanded in the Hasidic movement of reducing yourself to ein, or ayin, nothingness. Negating all interest in sort of the acquisitiveness. And that's how you really reach life. You know, thinking of yourself less. And I think simultaneously thinking less of yourself. But admitting that you are, if you look at, does everyone sort of remember a little bit of high school physics? Not you guys. But there was a thing you used to make called a free body diagram, which is you take a dot and you imagine it to have no mass and no dimensions, and then you explain the forces upon it. That's what we are. We're really almost a dimensionless dot in the universe. And I hate saying it because it feels like I'm hurting you to say it. And at the same time, like I said, it's liberating. It's an incredible feeling to have no friction, to have no mass, to be light. as we talk about in the Torah and the Parsha, this is no small trifling thing, but it is your life. That life is both fragile and gargantuan. That we live at a crossroads of incredible importance and incredible nothingness. A moment where you are with someone when they are learning about their own mortality, they are entering hospice, they are near the end of their lives, you say the vidui with them, for example, if you ever have that, or Chevra Kadisha. To be just so wholly aware of the impermanence, and that means it's important. If we were immortal, what we do would matter a lot less, actually. And we'd all like to be the center of the universe, but that's not true. And that can cause a lot of delusional behavior, says Maimonides. So in the Guide for the Perplexed, his most famous work, or one of his two most famous works, he says, know that the difficulties leading to confusion in the question of what is the purpose of the universe arise from two causes. First, humankind has an erroneous idea of himself. He uses him. And believes that the whole world exists only for his sake. Secondly, he is ignorant both about the nature of the world and about the Creator's intentions to give existence of all beings to all beings whose existence is possible, because existence is undoubtedly good. Meaning the world's a lot bigger than you think it is, and you are a smaller cog. And that leads to imagine that some of God's work are trivial, or others purposeless, or others in vain. Who's lived near the Rockies or really large ranges? It's terrifying. I used to find them terrifying when I was in the far west. They seem like monsters about to walk over and destroy the city. Or you stare out into the Atlantic, and it's just so improbably vast. Or the forests of the Smokies, you know, that all came from one germ. Or my children are really into dinosaurs, and to think things existed that were 60 feet tall is just so dumbfounding. Or the cockroaches used to be this big. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's an amazing thing to get to be alive. Whether you are 2 or 8 or 80, every moment is precious, and a lot of it we waste. You know, a lot of it we resent. There's boredom. You may be bored right now. I'm sorry. But I'm okay with that. I don't hold on to my sermon so tightly that you'd have to like everyone or any of them. But it all mattered. And it mattered because it was small. I can't explain that paradox other than to say it out loud. I'm going to leave you with a story from Emerson that my mother shared with me. It's not a story. So Emerson said that heaven walks among us, ordinarily muffled in such triple or tenfold disguise that the wisest are deceived and no one suspects the days to be God's. Finish each day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day, begin it well and serenely, and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us.